Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This sanctuary idea for kids in poverty goes deep. Listen once again to young Jairo Gomez trying to think like a grown-up about his troubled childhood.
I've seen articles posted on Facebook about how unlikely it is to get out of poverty, how poor people usually stay poor. If I don't get an education, I'll be stuck like my parents. But I haven't always been able to make school my priority. When I was younger, I felt like a robot. All I did was go home and help babysit and clean.
A child recalling feeling like a robot, confronting poverty without even knowing it. Does that constitute a traumatic experience for a young person? And is there a way for medicine to be vigilant about the possible effects of poverty on the developing brains of kids? Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris is a pediatrician who has pioneered models of addressing brain health at her clinic in the Bayview-Hunter Point neighborhood of San Francisco, a severely impoverished, mostly black area of the city. Poverty, abuse, or neglect affect brain development, Dr. Harris has learned. But part of the problem is also part of the solution, she says. Developing bodies and brains can be shaped by trauma and also, she says, reshaped by targeted therapies for children to prevent extreme poverty from defining them.
You know, what's so cool about it is this thing called neuroplasticity. So throughout our lifetimes, our brains are growing and adapting to our environment. However, 90% of one type of neuroplasticity, which is called cellular plasticity, which is the connection between one brain cell to another, 90% of that occurs by the sixth birthday. So we know that early childhood is really a special window of opportunity to make sure that kids have the best early start.
And so by four, there could be some adverse effects from neglect and abuse. But if you intervene by the age of six, there's the chance of reversing?
That's exactly right. And in fact, that's what we see in my clinic in San Francisco every day. The Center for Youth Wellness is an organization that was created to address this new medical understanding of how adversity affects the developing brains and bodies of children. And in my patients, I actually see that when we intervene early, they do so much better.
What does this say about the strategy of early childhood intervention? I mean, we've had Head Start for quite a while, and there are other programs that have been, you know, funded during the Obama administration that focus on early childhood intervention. How would you add to that based on the data and the results that you've seen?
What this says about these early programs is that they're well-founded in terms of the basis in the science, that the earlier we make an investment in our kids, absolutely the better. But one of the pieces that science is also now beginning to show us is the importance of a healthy and supported caregiver in being able to buffer stress or adversity for children. And it actually reduces some of their physiologic stress responses. And so now what we understand is that we really have to take a two-generation approach. We have to support both the child and the caregiver.
What can you tell me about your personal experience in your clinic and how things can really be turned around for individual young people?
In our center, the Center for Youth Wellness in San Francisco, we do a couple things a little differently. First thing that we do is we actually screen all of our patients for what we call adverse childhood experiences, which are these experiences of abuse or neglect or living in a household with domestic violence. And then we correlate that against the data that tells us their risk of disease. So, for example, we've been talking a lot about the effect of adversity on brain development, but it turns out it affects the entire developing systems of children, their immune systems, hormonal systems, even the way their DNA is read and transcribed. So I know that if I have a patient with a high dose of adversity, they're actually not only more likely to struggle in school and have problems with impulse control, but they're also more likely to develop asthma, diabetes, heart disease, or lung disease.
You're a pediatrician, and I mean, we both know that pediatricians, in addition to monitoring data and doing research also have those faces of kids in their minds. Who can you recall who particularly, I think, tells the tale of how important this kind of intervention is?
I think it was just last week I was seeing a patient in clinic, and it was a young man. He's now 13 years old, and he came to me really because his teacher had asked his grandmother to see about getting ADHD medications for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And I noticed that he was also having terrible asthma. And when we did our screening, it turns out this young man was hearing gunshots every day on the way to school. His school had been locked down because there was a shooter on site. He had dealt with, you know, significant strife within his family, and they were just struggling. His grandmother was so worried about his safety in the community that she actually took a part-time job instead of a full-time job so that she could make sure that he could get to school. When I saw him, I did the screening, and we started addressing this and getting to the root causes of what was going on with him. We were able to get him into therapy. I was able to do education with his grandmother and provide them with additional resources. And I will tell you, this young man just started high school, and he is on the honor roll. And I have not had to treat an asthma exacerbation in over a year.
Is it part of that neuroplasticity idea that kids respond because they really want to get out of the situation that they're in?
Kids respond well when both they and their caregiver have the resources to help themselves get out of the situation that they're in. Every caregiver, I have met caregivers, you know, of every kind of every shade and every walk of life. I have never met a parent or a grandparent or an auntie or an uncle who did not care about the well-being of their child. The thing about neuroplasticity is that the brain responds directly in response to their environment. If the environment is enriched, the brain flourishes. But if the environment is full of stressors and toxins, then children will adapt that way as well.
Is this an argument for thinking about poverty less in economic terms and more in public health terms?
This is a public health crisis. In the original study that was done with the CDC and Kaiser, 67% of the population had at least one adverse childhood experience, and 12.6% had four or more. Not only do these conditions of adversity increase the risk for things like depression and suicidality, they also increase the risk of ischemic heart disease, the number one killer in the United States. The amount of money that we spend in our country treating ischemic heart disease, when it turns out that if you have four or more of these adverse childhood experiences, your risk of ischemic heart disease is double. And if you have seven or more, your risk is 3.5 times as compared to someone with none. So we are paying for it both economically, but also in morbidity and mortality.
Dr. Nadine Burke Harris is a pediatrician and founder of the Center for Youth Wellness in San Francisco. Dr. Harris, thanks so much.
Thank you.